So picture this. You're driving, right? It's the evening. Maybe you're doing about 45 miles an hour on a local road.
Pretty standard speed, yeah.
Right, totally normal. But at 45 miles per hour, your car is covering something like 66 feet every single second.
Which is a massive amount of ground when you really think about it.
Exactly. And, you know, think about just the physical reality of your eyes. You glance down at the glaring screen of your GPS, or, let's be honest, your smartphone.
Oh, yeah. And those screens are incredibly bright in a dark car.
Blindingly bright. So your pupils instantly constrict to handle all that light. But then you look back up at the dark road, and it actually takes the average human eye like 2 to 3 full seconds to readjust to the dark.
Yeah, that biology doesn't care about how fast you're driving.
Right. So in that tiny, you know, seemingly harmless moment where your eyes are adjusting, you are effectively driving a 2-ton machine completely blind for almost 200 feet.
Wow. 200 feet. I mean, that is more than enough distance to blow through an entire intersection.
Yeah, or jump a curb.
Exactly. Or completely fail to see a pedestrian who's just stepping out into a crosswalk. We tend to just treat nighttime driving like, oh, it's just the daytime commute, but someone turned the lights off.
Yeah, just use your headlights, right?
Right. But mechanically and biologically, it's a completely different, like, highly volatile environment.
Well, we are getting right into it today. We're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating safety and legal briefing from the law offices of Norman Gershon.
Yeah, this is a heavy one.
It is. The source material focuses on this severe recent nighttime crash that happened on Ann Street, right in Spring Valley. But looking at the single event, really, it cracks open this massive systemic issue.
Right, an issue that's affecting pedestrians and drivers across the entire Hudson Valley in New York City.
Exactly. So our mission today is to pull apart the mechanics of why these local corridors turn so lethal after dark. We're going to look at the brutal physical and financial fallout of these accidents.
And critically, we're going to break down the legal architecture of how victims actually fight back against these, you know, multi-billion dollar insurance companies.
Because whether you're commuting down the Palisades Interstate Parkway, or you're navigating the tight streets of Yonkers, or even just walking the avenues of Manhattan, these risks are hyper-local to you.
Yeah, the legal strategies we're unpacking here, they aren't just abstract courtroom theories. They're the literal mechanisms that protect you when the infrastructure you use every day suddenly becomes a hazard.
So let's start with the physical reality of that crash on Ann Street. The briefing outlines a scenario where a vehicle didn't just rear-end someone, it completely left the roadway.
Yeah, jumped the curb.
Jumped the curb, struck a building, and hit a pedestrian. And I mean, the injuries were severe. When a vehicle leaves the roadway entirely like that, the whole foundational assumption of pedestrian safety is shattered.
Right, the idea that the sidewalk is this, like, safe sanctuary.
Exactly. It's totally gone. And the briefing expands this danger zone out to Rockland County, White Plains, Yonkers, all throughout NYC. They cite this whole cocktail of hazards.
Oh, yeah. Reduced visibility, driver fatigue, complex street layouts, distracted driving, all of it.
It really makes me think of like a maze where the walls keep shifting. During the day, you have this deep depth of field. Even if a road layout is confusing, say, a sudden merge on Route 59, you have the visual context of the cars hundreds of yards ahead to figure it out.
Right. You can see the puzzle before you get to it.
Exactly. But at night, your aperture is struggling. You only see what's directly in the cone of your headlights. So my question is, why does that simple transition from day to night completely rewire the danger level of these specific roads?
Well, the environment basically sets a trap, and human error springs it. In accident reconstruction, they actually call this a compounding variable failure.
Compounding variable failure. Okay, what does that actually mean on the ground?
It means it's rarely just one thing. So take an isolated hazard, like a really faded crosswalk in White Plains. At noon, on a Tuesday, people can see it. It probably won't cause an accident.
Because we have the sunlight.
Exactly. But place that exact same faded crosswalk in a poorly lit intersection. Then add a driver who is dealing with cognitive fatigue at 9 p.m.
Oh, man.
And then introduce the glare of a dashboard GPS screen. Suddenly, the environment and the human element break down simultaneously.
The compounding variables.
Yes. Proving liability in these cases requires an attorney to map out that exact sequential chain of events. They have to prove mechanically how the road's specific flaws interacted with the driver's compromised vision.
That makes a lot of sense, but I want to pause on the aftermath of that chain of events because the human toll detailed in the notes is just immense.
It's devastating.
We're talking about traumatic brain injuries, TBIs, severe spinal cord damage, internal bleeding, permanent disability. And because the trauma is so severe, the briefing gives this massive, bold-faced warning.
Yes, the immediate action steps.
Right. It says to seek immediate medical care, document the scene if you're physically capable, and it strictly warns to never, under any circumstances, speak to an insurance adjuster alone.
Yeah, that is a critical rule. This is where the physical trauma transitions into this highly adversarial legal and financial battle.
See, I want to push back on that a little bit, just playing devil's advocate for the listener here.
Okay, go for it.
Because if I'm the victim and I'm lying in a hospital bed with, like, a shattered femur, my immediate priority is triage. I'm staring at a mountain of medical bills.
Naturally.
My human instinct is to cooperate. If the police report clearly says I was hit on the sidewalk, why shouldn't I just give a polite, factual statement to the insurance adjuster so they can pay for my surgery? Why is that a trap?
Because you are assuming the insurance adjuster's role is to facilitate your healing. I mean, it is absolutely not.
It's not.
No. Insurance companies are massive financial institutions. They use sophisticated claims assessment software, basically these giant risk management algorithms that are designed to minimize their financial exposure.
So they're just looking out for their bottom line.
Precisely. When an adjuster calls you in the hospital, usually within 24 hours of a crash, you are sleep deprived. You're on heavy medication. You're in shock.
And they know that.
They absolutely know that. They aren't gathering facts to help you. They're fishing for data inputs to feed their algorithm to devalue your claim.
Wow. So they are literally looking for loopholes, in my own words.
Yes. Because in New York, the law operates under a principle called pure comparative negligence.
Okay. What is that?
It means that if a jury finds the plaintiff, the victim, even 10% at fault for the accident, their financial award is reduced by 10%.
Wait, really? Just 10%? Yep.
Yep. So if you're on the phone with an adjuster and you casually say something like, I guess I didn't see the car coming, I was looking at my phone too, you have just handed them the ammunition to assign you partial liability.
Oh, man. Even if they jumped the curb and hit me on the sidewalk?
Exactly. Furthermore, they weaponize basic human politeness.
How so?
Well, an adjuster asks, hi, how are you feeling today? And you give the standard reflex answer, right? Oh, I'm okay. Just a little sore.
I mean, that's just what you say to people.
Right, but they record that. 6 months later, when you file a claim for long-term neurological rehab because of a TBI, they will play that recording back to claim your injuries were minor at the time.
You're kidding.
I wish I was. They'll argue your current issues are totally unrelated to the crash.
That is wow. They separate the initial impact from the chronic, long-term reality of the injury. That fundamentally shifts how I view this entire process.
It has to. It is not an administrative task. It's a defensive war.
Yeah, and knowing how aggressively these algorithms are designed to shortchange victims, it really clarifies why the briefing emphasizes the need for elite legal representation.
Because the financial compensation at stake is staggering. We aren't just talking about a single ER bill.
Right, it's a lifetime of care.
Exactly. It's the total loss of future earning capacity, home modifications for a wheelchair, profound pain and suffering. The algorithms calculate the absolute minimum they can offer to just make the case go away quietly.
Which brings us to the specific firm the source material introduces, the Law Offices of Norman Gershon. They have over 35 years of trial experience. But there is this specific reputation highlighted here that I think changes the whole calculus.
Oh, the lawyer's lawyer reputation.
Yes. Throughout Westchester County and NYC, Norman Gershon is known as the attorney principal. Other lawyers call to try their toughest cases. I kept thinking of it like baseball.
Like a closer.
Exactly. He's the ultimate closer. You bring him in at the bottom of the ninth when the stakes are incredibly high and the case is super complex. It feels very much like game theory to me.
That is a highly accurate analogy. The insurance company holds all the chips when it's just an injured person navigating an online portal. But when you introduce a lawyer with a history of dragging these companies into court and winning, it totally alters the dynamic.
So how does the insurance company react to that?
Remember those algorithms. They calculate a trial risk profile based heavily on the plaintiff's opposing counsel.
Oh, so they research the lawyer.
Oh, thoroughly. If the attorney on record is known as a settlement mill-like, someone who never goes to court and just churns through cases for quick, low payouts, the algorithm advises a lowball offer.
Because there's no actual threat of a jury forcing them to pay more, they know the lawyer will just fold.
Exactly. But when an attorney recognized as a lawyer's lawyer steps in, that algorithm flashes red. The insurance company knows that an attorney who routinely tries the toughest cases has the capital, the expert witnesses, and the stamina to expose their tactics to a jury.
It's mutually assured destruction for the insurance company.
Precisely. The threat of a highly publicized, catastrophic jury verdict forces them to instantly recalibrate their stance. They have to take the claim seriously from day one.
And crucially, the briefing notes this firm operates on a contingency basis, which means you only pay if you win.
Right, which is huge because it allows a traumatized victim to suddenly access this top-tier legal deterrence without paying a dime out of pocket.
That's a massive equalizer. But let's look at what happens when that deterrence actually goes to court. Because a fierce reputation gets you a seat at the adult table, but winning those massive verdicts requires something deeper.
Yes, it requires hyper-local knowledge.
Right, and the briefing details how the Gershon firm leverages their understanding of the local environment. They operate across this vast footprint, from the dense grid of Manhattan to the suburban sprawl of the Bronx, Queens, and the broader Hudson Valley.
And that matters because of the mechanical reality of the burden of proof. I mean, the jury wasn't at the accident. They didn't feel the impact or see the street lighting.
So the lawyer has to paint the picture.
The burden is entirely on the plaintiff's attorney to reconstruct that specific environment so vividly that the defense's narrative just collapses.
And the results they get from doing this are huge. I mean, looking at the numbers in the notes, they list a $16.5 million verdict for a bus accident in the Bronx Supreme Court.
Huge numbers.
Yeah, and a $14.5 million settlement for an MTA crash in Queens, alongside multiple verdicts over $5 million. I really want to dig into the mechanics of that.
Sure.
How does an attorney take a hyper-local detail, like, say, the lighting condition of a specific intersection in the Bronx, and use it to secure a $16.5 million verdict? How does that granular detail actually dismantle the defense?
Well, the defense will almost always attempt to blame the victim. They rely on that comparative negligence we talked about earlier.
Right, trying to get that percentage of fault.
Exactly. So they might argue, oh, the pedestrian darted out into the crosswalk wearing dark clothing, giving the bus driver no time to react.
A classic defense.
Very classic. But an attorney with deep local knowledge doesn't just argue against that statement. They dissect the physical environment to prove it false.
How do they do that?
They'll pull municipal maintenance records to show the city knew that the specific sodium vapor street lamp at that Bronx intersection had been burnt out for 3 months.
Oh, wow. So they prove the city knew it was dark.
Exactly. Or they'll bring in forensic meteorologists to establish the exact glare of the setting sun at that precise time of year. They'll use traffic flow data to prove the driver was operating at an unsafe speed given the known congestion of that local corridor.
They just systematically remove every single excuse the defense tries to build.
Piece by piece, they paint a picture of the environment so technically precise that it leaves the jury with only one logical conclusion about who was actually at fault.
That is incredible. But, you know, reading the testimonials in the briefing, that technical precision really has to be paired with something else.
Empathy, yeah.
Yeah, the ability to connect with the human element. There is this fascinating duality revealed here. Client Michael Benowich describes Norman Gershon as smart, experienced, compassionate, tough.
And Nancy Joyce echoes that. She points out he got a bigger settlement than I expected, while also calling him kind, caring, and incredibly effective.
It's like you have to be this absolute apex predator when you're cross-examining an insurance adjuster or taking apart an engineer's testimony.
Right.
But then you have to turn around and be a deeply empathetic trauma counselor when you walk back into the conference room with a family whose world has just been shattered. Finding someone who can seamlessly code switch between those two extremes seems incredibly rare.
Oh, it is. But it's the defining hallmark of a firm capable of handling eight-figure litigation.
You really need both.
You do. You cannot win a complex TBI or spinal cord case without the intellectual ruthlessness to outmaneuver those insurance algorithms. But you also cannot survive the years-long process of that litigation without an attorney who genuinely cares about your actual recovery.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, the takeaway from this deep dive is pretty definitive. The physics of a nighttime crash are just unforgiving.
And the infrastructure we navigate is often compromised before we even get in the car.
Exactly. And the insurance industry is structurally designed to protect its own wealth, not your health. So serious accidents demand serious, uncompromising representation.
They really do.
If you or a family member are injured in a crash involving a pedestrian, a vehicle, or property, do not attempt to navigate the aftermath alone. You can put 35 years of hyperlocal trial experience to work for you by contacting the law offices of Norman Gershon at 914-485-1444. Let me say that one more time. It's 914-485-4444.
You know, before you take that next evening walk or drive home tonight, consider this.
What's that?
We've spent all this time unpacking how deeply our local road layouts, the shifting traffic patterns, and these sudden drops in visibility contribute to these catastrophic events.
Yeah.
It really begs our rather unsettling question.
Wishes.
Are we increasingly relying on elite legal advocates to protect us and make us whole? Precisely because the physical infrastructure we trust with our lives every single day has already failed us.
Wow. That reframes the entire commute. You start looking at those faded crosswalks and humming streetlights, not just as part of the scenery, but as like variables in a very high stakes equation. We will leave you with that to think about.